Italy first. The alphabetical sequence has been very cruel to me this week. Where's Simon Armitage when you need him? I don't know what the difference is between being a fan of a writer's work and being an expert on a writer's work. I'm definitely tended towards the former, although the two things, of course, interpenetrate. So I thought what I'd like to do is just say a few things about why I'm a fan of Louis Benice's poetry, why his work excites me and continues to intrigue and excite me. I think, like I said last night when I started to read, I do think, I was only being semi-facetious, I do think influence is a very strange, a very personal thing, and it is essentially mysterious. And most of the time, like Paul said earlier, you don't really know what's going on, and it's often for others to locate all of these other dimensions in your work, and you're unaware of them in the moment, while it's happening, while the poem has been written and drafted. So there's this strange, it almost happens by a process of osmosis or something, long hours of reading and rereading, which I suppose chime with some dimension of the reader's imagination, the writer's imagination. But writers are greedy, you know, writers are greedy bastards. They want to learn, they want to emulate, and they want to steal, you know, or at least I do. Especially early on. I mean, that's how it seems to work, and this is part of the trade and commerce between poems that has to happen. So I'll just say a few things about why Wordsworth excites me, different dimensions of Nietzsche's work. I describe, just to give an example of how you're not really fully aware, or hardly aware in my case, of what is actually going on, is that I discovered with great pleasure that McNeice read Robert Louis Stevenson, and liked Stevenson's work. And this is a writer I read as a child, especially those the child's garden of verses that I'm sure many of you are aware of. And so one of my poems was called, the first poem I read last night is called From a Weekend First. Which is that, you know, the poem by Stevenson, From a Railway Carriage, Fairies and Witches poem. And Larkin too, you know, he points towards Stevenson in a poem like This Be the Verse, you know, This Be the Verse from that poem in Underwoods. And there's a poem in the last book I did called The News Agent, which is just, and I had no idea that I was doing this, but after it was written, I realised it was written in four teams, and it's basically just a version of The Lamplighter by Stevenson, but in my case it's about a newsagent who's doing the same kind of, you know, pre-dawn thing. He's opening up his shop. And so I was thrilled to discover there's a kind of triangulation, if you like, between, this is my cack-handed, unscholarly version of events, you understand, between me, McNeice, and Larkin. And I get quite testy sometimes when people just see the Larkin train dimension of some of my poems, because, as Patrick has just said, trains are a very Magnesian vehicle too. And you see this through so much of his work. There's that poem Train to Dublin. I've just written down a few of these lines earlier. All over the world, people toasting the king, red lozenges of light as each one lifts his glass. This is a poem I keep going back to. There's one called Restaurant Car. There's one of the later poems called Stargazer, Corner Seat. There's trains passing through lots of McNeice's works, and I keep going back to those. Also McNeice and films, something about the way watching lots of movies can materially alter the way that you see the world and you see things and you write about things. And so some kind of relationship between sprockets and rails. And so I was also thrilled to learn, to discover, maybe unsurprisingly, that he was an avid film goer, at least for one period in his life, which is when he was in Birmingham in the 30s, and he was perhaps keen to, you know, escape the dull routine of his lecturing classics there. He used to go to the movies quite often, and you can see the fallout from this, the creative spoil from this, if you like, and you can see it soon after, actually, in Autumn Journal, you know, that line in Autumn Journal where Lombard and Bing, I mentioned, sleep in your world of celluloid. So that intrigues me massively as well. And there's subsidiary things to both of those, especially the film one, which is his preoccupation with reflections and reflected things. So I don't know, there's a poem called Reflections where he imagines his study and traffic passing through his study. And also the poem Budgie, one of the late poems where Budgie admires himself in. in that baby pink rimmed mirror, the beautiful like poem of his. And also I wanted to say something about windows and McNeice, and there is a poem called Windowscape, and snow, of course, all happens with this frame around it. And I'll just say the word ekphrasis, and I'll just leave it hanging in the air like that, and you can ask me about it, because I don't want to go any further than that. But I like the way he often puts frames around things, and there's this mediating thing and a world once removed in McNeice. I'm also, another thing I'm very curious about with him is, I know there's a branch of English scholarship which literally just counts up the frequency that words occur, so it's a certain noun, say, might occur in McNeice. I'd be curious to know, it seems to me, subjectively to me, that the words dark and black keep recurring in McNeice, especially later on. And I love the subterranean McNeice as well. And I'm hoping, I don't know whether we can when we go to Carrickfergus, can we visit the salt galleries when we go to, can you go down the salt galleries? Are they open to the public? I'd love to go down the salt galleries. When I, as Patrick also mentioned, when I ended up writing a radio drama which featured McNeice, it had to happen underground, and so it happens in the bowels of the BBC broadcasting house during the Second World War. In fact, it happens in the men's toilets, deep beneath broadcasting house, where I imagine that he meets up with George Orwell. There's no record of the two ever meeting, but they were both employed by the BBC at the same time, so it could well have happened. And not just that, but it had to be mediated and once removed as well. And so the whole radio drama is framed by two guys in the here and now, in the present day, who've discovered some forgotten tapes that they keep playing, and you hear these two guys talking in the toilets 50 years ago, and it's McNeice and Orwell, and it just, all of those things kind of came together. It had to be dark, it had to be subterranean, and it had to be once removed in some way. So these are just things that when I go back and reread McNeice, that always the things that strike me about him, and how they've had an effect on my work. It's difficult to say, and I don't want to say, and some of you might want to point a few things out, and I'd be happy to take questions. I've waited on for long enough, and who's next, Patrick?
Sinead.
Let me hand over to Sinead, and please do ask me some questions at the end, because I'd rather we got to a conversation about this. Okay.